from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, we'll talk in the first half hour about breast cancer prevention, detection, and treatment as we focus on a new project out of University of California, San Francisco called the Athena Breast Health Network, which brings together a statewide collaboration and stretches across the Atlantic to Sweden. Then at 9:30, we'll meet Margaret Hamburg, the United States FDA Commissioner, who will be joining us in studio. You're invited to join us for the hour. That's up ahead on Forum. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. According to statistics from the American Cancer Society, more than 200,000 women in the United States annually get breast cancer, leading to over 40,000 deaths and over $20 billion spent each year in screening and treatment. A new revolutionary University of California system-wide data gathering project, the Athena Breast Health Network, is what we want to find out about in this opening Forum segment. It's a focus on new approaches to prevention, research, and treatment. And joining us for the half hour, Dr. Laura Esserman is professor of surgery and radiology and directs the Breast Care Center at UCSF, the Carol Frank Buck Breast Care Center, and is head of the Athena Breast Health Network. And welcome, Dr. Esserman.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, Michael.
Good to have you. We also have Arish Naeem with us, who's associate professor of medicine, hematology, oncology, and Athena site principal investigator at UCLA and joins us from Los Angeles. Welcome to the program. Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you here. And Laura Esserman, let me begin with you. This is going to involve some 150,000 women throughout California. It's a UC system-wide project involving five UC med centers. And following women for decades, the idea, I guess, is to get standardized collection of data for both patients and physicians?
Well, it's really just a different way to approach our treatment, prevention, and screening. So our goal isn't just to treat cancer, of course, but to prevent it whenever we can. And so, and we also know that, you know, cancer is not one disease. So we want to try and help move forward the revolution to provide personalized care. So we have put together amongst our campuses this unprecedented partnership or collaboration among all the specialties. And what we really hope to do is say, okay, how can we use the information we have to make sure people are getting the most optimal care they can today, get rapid feedback on what we're doing, and learn in a way that we can prevent breast cancer much more effectively in the future. Our approaches to screening right now don't really help us with prevention, but there is a lot we can do to reduce breast cancer risk, and we want to make sure that that gets on the radar, and we want to make sure that we learn from the new innovations in treatment to make sure that that informs how we approach screening and prevention.
Some of these new innovations in treatment I'm reading about include molecular tests and molecular tools to actually predict and tailoring treatment, as you suggested, to the individual and to individual tumors even.
Right, and absolutely. And so we actually, you know, if that's what we're doing for treatment, and we know that those cancers aren't the same, we need to start to sort out, well, who's at risk for what kind of breast cancer? You know, and for the cancers that perhaps are not killer cancers, we don't have to worry so much about prevention, but those may be very simple to prevent, much simpler to prevent. And some of the more aggressive cancers that we don't know how to prevent, we hopefully will really come up with some new answers and some new ways to identify such women and hopefully to prevent them from having cancer in the future.
We're talking about the Athena Breast Health Network, which is launching the first of a series of face-to-face forums where patients, breast cancer experts, and community members can actually exchange direct experience and research in breast health care. And I should mention that there's going to be an event tomorrow evening that I'm participating in over at the Commonwealth Club at 7 o'clock, and you can find out more about it just by going to athenacarenetworking.org. I want to find out also more about this from Dr. Naeem, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, Dr. Esserman, about the Susan G. Komen thing that is blowing up and now has sort of died down, Race for the Cure and known for all of the work on breast cancer that they have done, and then suddenly pulling funds out of Planned Parenthood, and then after social networks got a hold of it, putting them back.
Well, I would say that as an organization, that Komen has said that they would help provide funds for screening and for people who can't afford it. This is the Planned Parenthood has provided enormous net for women, and they provide those services, and I'm certainly very glad to see that Komen has recognized that they should continue to support them. I think that's what the public expected. That was sort of the story they heard back from the public, who were not happy with that decision, and I'm very glad to see that they have changed their mind.
And again, Laura Esserman is professor of surgery and radiology and director of the Breast Care Center at UCSF, and Dr. Arash Naim is associate professor of medicine and hematology, oncology, and an Athena site principal investigator. He's at UCLA. Dr. Naim, let's talk more about personalized medicine, because I know that that's something that you're particularly focusing on in your work. Where does expertise come in to get overhaul medicine that is just more personally tailored to the individual patient?
Well, I mean, I think personalized medicine is a combination of a variety of things. I think breast cancer researchers for years have been focusing on directed treatments to the breast cancer itself, and I think we're at a kind of a dawn of an age where with the technology that we can do molecular profiling, that'll be much more targeted. I think that the tricky thing is to try to think of the context of the patient, their overall health, and the uniqueness of the individual with respect to the specific type of breast cancer that they have and the sort of treatment that they can also tolerate. And I think when you talk about something that's personalized, it also means that you have to figure out how to communicate it to the patient in a way that they understand their individual risks and can be a partner in the process of taking care of their own health. And I think one of the most innovative things of this whole Athena project is engaging the patient as a partner, making sure that they understand their risk, that they can engage the healthcare system, and then to provide navigators, really, to help allow them to access the healthcare system and take some ownership of their own healthcare system.
Could you talk about how mammography fits into this whole picture, particularly in terms of prevention? Because there's been a lot of criticism about mammography being inefficient and too much of it with older women and so forth.
Well, I mean, clearly, screening mammography is the main sort of screening tool that we have in breast cancer today. I think that there's a lot of activity going on trying to figure out how to improve that as a screening tool, using either breast density or other sorts of tools to augment what we already know. I think the challenge is, of course, that the data that has come from numerous trials that have been done in screening mammogram have primarily been in individuals under the age of 75. Yet Medicare pays 4 out of 10 individuals that they reimburse are for people over the age of 75. And trying to figure out kind of how the data extends to that population is pretty challenging, especially because older, just as Dr. Esserman was saying, not all breast cancers are the same. Not all older individuals are the same either. And there's a heterogeneity of other competing diseases that an older individual has in terms of either congestive heart failure, hypertension, diabetes. And to try to put breast cancer screening and prevention in the right sort of milieu of all the other medical issues that an older individual has to deal with is an important thing. And so part of personalizing is targeting and trying to be strategic in terms of the sorts of issues that we address in terms of health care for each segment of the population.
That's as opposed to a blanket recommendation, for example.
That's correct.
We're going to open the phone lines. This is a half-hour segment, so if you have questions about breast cancer screening, treatment, prevention, or about the Athena Breast Health Network, which is really a very innovative and in many ways extraordinary project, because there's a good deal of possibility of transferring this project to not only other cancers but to other diseases, and I think it's pretty exciting. You can join us, and our toll-free number is available to you. A number of ways of reaching us. You can reach us right now toll-free by calling 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls and any questions or comments you might have. Again, it's toll-free 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post questions or comments on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. By the way, you can find out the website of Athena Care Network on our website as well. It's just athenacarenetwork.org. But you can also communicate with us by going to our Facebook page, and we do welcome your calls and emails and your communication, so please feel free to call us. And as I said, this is a half-hour segment, so it would be important to get your questions and comments in now, either by email or by phone. or going to the website or the Facebook page. Laura Esserman, there's a good deal of talk about prevention in terms of attention to diet and attention to watching how much people drink. Again, that's personalized, I suppose, but also things like a combination of hormone replacement therapy. This is all part of, again, tailoring and attempting to bring down the numbers of breast cancer through prevention?
Absolutely. And I think that we need to pay attention to all of it. So there are a whole, you know, that just like there are a whole bunch of things we can do, there's also a whole bunch of types of risk. Some people may be at high risk for, you know, for breast cancer because they've inherited an error in a gene that makes them more predisposed to breast and ovarian cancer. Those are people we want to identify early and make sure that we can tailor screening and prevention options accordingly. And, you know, we may also find that, you know, there are women who have a pretty significant risk. You know, about now we think there's about a 10 to 12% lifetime risk of getting breast cancer. So everybody has some lifetime risk. Every woman does at least lifetime risk for breast cancer. But some have more, like 30 or 40%. And for some of those people at highest risk, you know, there are some simple interventions, you know, drugs that actually are used to improve bone density, also drop the breast cancer risk by half. So there are lots of opportunities to do things that people just aren't routinely aware of. And so part of what we're trying to do with Athena is make prevention a watchword. So when you come in for a screening, the other thing we should do is risk assessment to try and understand, so what's your story? And as Arash said, you know, we want to understand the context. You know, do you have a lot of other medical conditions where breast cancer risk may be sort of irrelevant relative to other things that are going on? Or
also, excuse me, what's your genetic background, too, of course?
Yeah, what's your genetic background? And so we can actually start to begin to tailor our recommendations. So we have a way where patients are filling out surveys so we can identify those people at highest risk and make sure that they don't fall through the cracks. You know, people can make personal choices, but it's hard to make choices if you aren't given the information. And as a byproduct, we're going to learn from every person we see. You know, that's the revolution that we're trying to put forward here, is that, you know, we don't want to just treat one person at a time. Everyone wants to solve this problem about breast cancer, and only together can we really make a difference and accelerate our ability to eradicate breast cancer. And our model, actually, in a lot of ways, is heart disease, right? On heart disease, we've done a huge, you know, we've made a huge impact in preventing people from dying from heart disease. We look at blood pressure and cholesterol and exercise and diet, all those things. So all those things, you know, it's that same approach that we want to take in breast cancer. This is just the beginning, right?
It sounds like a very auspicious beginning, and I want to get our callers and our listeners involved in this. Just a quick question, though, for Dr. Naeem, and that is, what about tamoxifen? It's gotten kind of a bad rap in terms of use as a preventive measure. Any recommendations here, or is this, again, individual?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, tamoxifen is one of those drugs that's been out on the market for a long time, and the longer any drug is out on the market, the more familiar providers and patients are with it. And so it's not surprising that patients oftentimes have a better understanding of the side effect profile of a drug that's been on the market longer. They may not always have an appropriate sort of perception of the risk of the side effects, and maybe they overestimate the risks from tamoxifen. There have been, interestingly enough, a variety of studies that have looked at even doing detailed sort of aids in helping patients to understand the risks of tamoxifen and even the benefits, but still there's a lot of individuals that are reluctant to go on tamoxifen, you know, of the people that might be offered of it. You know, it's a small percentage of people that actually opt in for it. And I think part of the reason is that it's very difficult communicating risk. You know, it's not, health risks are something that is difficult oftentimes for people to be able to appreciate. It takes a lot of time to communicate relative risks of breast cancer versus other things that are happening in an individual's life. And as healthcare becomes more and more kind of a fast service commodity where physicians have less time to spend with patients, trying to figure out ways of communicating to patients so that they understand their risks in a context that they can really appreciate, I think is going to be really important.
Let me bring in our callers, and we'll go first to you, Marga. You're on. Good morning. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. What a great, I wouldn't have known about it if it weren't for you. Thank you so much for the program, and I look forward to going and finding out more about it. My question was, I've never seen statistics on whether the rate of breast cancer for women who have had regular mammograms and those are not. And my follow-up paranoia question is whether the machines are routinely monitored so they don't give off excessive radiation.
Dr. Esserman.
I can take that question. So those are excellent questions. And, in fact, one of the things that we found with screening is the rates of breast cancer have gone up, right? So that we do know that along with finding some, breast cancers earlier, we probably are surfacing some additional cancers and maybe some that are perhaps not so harmful. That's actually something that we can address by using some of the molecular tools. So unfortunately, any screening test that you use will surface additional abnormalities. It increases your false positive, increases maybe the identification of indolent cancers, or slow-growing cancers. That's true for cervical cancer screening, for lung cancer screening. So you need to be able to have the tools to deal with that so you don't over-treat once they're found, and that's actually another important aspect of Athena, where we're really going to be introducing the molecular profiling to make sure that we are able to treat appropriately. If you go to a certified mammography center, there are national requirements for all the machines to be inspected, and they're inspected actually pretty rigorously. So again, if you go to a center, there's a program called MQSA, and if they have a certificate, they have been inspected, and you can feel assured that it's being done right. But it is very important to go someplace where you have dedicated mammographers and people who have the experience who will be able to find the most cancers if they are there, and recall the fewest women for things that turn out to be benign.
Let me thank Marga for her call, and we'll go right to another caller. And Susan, that's you. Join us. You're on forum. Welcome.
Hi. I have a question and then a comment. My question is, have you mentioned the increased risk among Ashkenazi Jewish women? And my comment is that I am here today because when I discovered a lump, and two doctors said it couldn't be cancer, and it did not show in the mammogram, I insisted on a biopsy, and indeed the lump was a malignant tumor, which was removed, and I had radiation, and I'm here today because I insisted, despite evidence that might have pointed to the contrary, on a biopsy.
Let's take the first question about increase in Ashkenazi Jews. This is, fairly understandable throughout the throughout the professional community, isn't it, Dr. Esserman?
Yes, it is. You know that there's a higher prevalence of having a BRCA1 or 2 mutation, but again, that risk in that population is pretty small, 1-2%. So even though it's higher, it's still pretty infrequent. Again, we pay a lot of attention to people's family history and other stories, but it is something that we think of in the back of our minds. And, callers, Susan's absolutely right. If you have a mass, go in and get it checked out. Mammography is one of the tools. It is simply one of the tools. And, in fact, some of the most aggressive cancers we know come up between mammograms. So those are the cancers that we probably don't impact with screening. People have to be aware. Again, it's all a partnership. So, we in the Athena Breast Health Network recognize that. So we would definitely biopsy it.
And Dr. Naim, what about male breast cancer?
Well, I mean, it exists, of course, at a very low rate. And I think that oftentimes there are males who especially are part of some of these hereditary families that have breast cancer who just don't realize that they may be at risk as well. I think part of what we're also trying to do via the project, the Athena Project, is to keep a close eye on males who come in and what the relationship is between males that develop breast cancer and high-risk sort of features, either based on family history or by collecting blood and saliva and seeing if there's some molecular sort of markers that we can do a better job at targeting those. But it's important for people to realize that male breast cancer can happen, and that if a male feels a lump or they come from a family where there's a lot of breast cancer, that may be a flag that they need to be monitored by their primary care provider.
And we'll go next to Lisa. Lisa, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Hi there. I have a history of atypical ductal hyperplasia, and that was about 4 years ago. And ever since, I've been monitored with mammograms and MRIs. And the only option I've been offered is, well, that and tamoxifen, which I've refused. And instead, I've just changed my diet and I've been exercising. So what questions can I ask my doctor about new options?
Laura Esser.
So, this is, of course, a common thing, and people are, of course, concerned. I don't know how old you are, and I'm not going to, I can't answer someone's personal situation on the air, but I think it's important to know that, about $100 million has been spent worldwide on breast cancer prevention studies. And one of the things that we've learned is that tamoxifen, which has really very few side effects in premenopausal women, actually reduces the risk of breast cancer in that group by 85% relatively. So, you could go from a 40% lifetime risk down to, under a 10%. So on below that group, that is one of the reasons why a drug like tamoxifen is suggested in the premenopausal setting. And, one of the things that we are hoping to do in Athena is try and come up with some other options, but also make sure that people really do understand what the benefits are, what the risks might be. And one exciting thing that we hope will help is that we're trying to develop some tools to understand if someone takes it, is it helping them in particular? If you take a statin to reduce your heart disease risk, you can measure your cholesterol and you go, oh, okay, it's working. Or your blood pressure medicines bring your blood pressure down. And we don't have something like that for tamoxifen. But we do know that if after a year your breast density goes down, that in fact you're in the group that's likely to have most of the benefit. So this is just the beginning of our ability to start to use tools to determine whether someone, in fact, is benefiting and for us to be more targeted. And my experience is that people want to know whether something's helping them in particular. And I think one last thing about tamoxifen, I always say to people, don't make a decision about whether you want to take it long-term or not. Get some information. Take it for a couple weeks, see if you have any particular side effects, because actually most people don't. And if they could take something that's pretty innocuous that doesn't give them side effects, they may feel differently about it. And again, it's just one of the tools. You don't have to do it, but it's something that you can do, and it's important that people understand what they do get and what they don't get.
Is that true also? I mean, in terms of what's been characterized as a precautionary principle, that is, it may be a tool and it may be useful, but it may, I don't mean to make it like tamoxifen, but in some respects, it does involve, free will in terms of what the patient wants.
Absolutely. Prevention, is for and even cancer isn't an emergency. People have the time to make good decisions and to understand what the facts are. And, we offer interventions. We understand that they're not perfect and not everyone likes them. But it's important for people to understand, what do I get from this and do I want to do it? And they have absolute free will. And, again, I just feel that a lot of times in the prevention setting that we don't take the time to help people understand what the risks and benefits are in that particular age group. And there's a lot of ways in which we can help people individually sort out what's good for them and what's not.
If you're on the line, hang on. We're going to try to take a couple more calls. We're also going to be spending some time with Dr. Margaret Hamburg, who is head of the FDA, and that's all coming up when we return here on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We are expecting Dr. Margaret Hamburg shortly, we hope, the head of the FDA. And we're going to continue and want to thank Dr. Esserman and Dr. Naeem for continuing with us to talk about breast cancer. The Athena Breast Health Network launching their first of a series of face-to-face forums where patients and breast cancer experts and community members can actually exchange direct experience and research in breast health care. And this first forum will examine breast cancer risk assessment and prevention, and the results from Tuesday's session will be fed back into the UC-based Athena network of 150,000 women to improve survival and reduce suffering from breast cancer. Dr. Esserman is the head of the Athena Breast Health Network. She's with us by phone this morning. She's also a professor of surgery and radiology and directs the Breast Care Center at UCSF, the Carol Frank Buck Breast Care Center. And Dr. Arish Nayam. Arish Nayam is also with us by phone. He's associate professor of medicine and hematology and oncology and an Athena site principal investigator and a professor at UCLA. Let me go to another one of your calls in from Novato. Grady, you're on. Good morning.
Yes, hi. Yes, I'm just starting chemo on Monday morning, and I've been trying to do my responsible thing about research and all that, but there's so many exciting things that are coming out that are both clinical trials and that are advised by either naturopathics or online is confusing. And I'm wondering about just whether or not I'm taking the TCH, Herceptin, included approach, and I already had the mastectomy. Can you tell me whether or not that I heard that statins actually might have some proven effectiveness as something to take while you're doing this that has some unintended side good side effect? Is that true?
Well, that's actually a good thought. It's actually something that I have been interested in studying, and theoretically, from our high-grade cancers, there's some suggestion that statins might be helpful, but it's been difficult to prove, and there are some ongoing studies that we have to try and look at it. I was particularly interested in it as a preventive because it's health-promoting, and if it might help, particularly more in the high-grade DCIS or cancers where we have fewer options, I thought it might be particularly exciting. I don't think we have anywhere near enough data to be able to say that it would work, because I have to say, even though I've been a promoter of it, I would say the data is very, very mixed. But I think it's worthy of additional study. And, you know, I think that's the most I could say.
As Dr. Esserman probably knows from being on with us before, Dr. Nayam, whenever we do a program on breast cancer, thermography comes up. What's your take on it?
Yeah, you know, I think that first of all, the disclaimer is that it's not an area of specialty of my own. But, I mean, I think the radiologists are looking at that quite a bit. And, you know, I think it holds potential as well. But I think it's still kind of early on in the scheme of things to know exactly where it will fit in. I don't know if Dr. Esserman has more on that.
Well, you know, there are actually, you know, the whole idea of thermography, it's sort of a great idea. You know, the concept of it is good, and, you know, the idea that you can use those kinds of techniques to find cracks in luggage and various things, and the idea is you might be able to find, you know, cancers in a different way. But unfortunately, the head-to-head studies have really not panned out, and this is both in the original studies and the incarnation of the new technology. It's just not very discriminatory. It can't tell. It really doesn't show truly when a cancer is there, and it doesn't show you when a cancer isn't there. So it's kind of not ready for the prime time.
Let me thank the caller. We'll get another call on, and that's Phil from Burlingame. Hi, Phil.
Hi. In the 80s, I remember there was a Connecticut doctor that had found that girls that have had teenage pregnancies have lower rates of breast cancer because the pregnancy changes the breast. And there was, you know, he proposed maybe giving birth control pills to maybe 13, 14-year-old girls, but the religious right practically took away his medical license. Has further study been done on that?
I can take that. There was a whole body of work by a guy named Ron Rawson, by a couple of people, Ron Rawson and Malcolm Pike, who, you know, certainly have demonstrated that, you know, that one of the things that has changed between prior decades and today is the number of menstrual cycles that somebody might have. And so a lot of their work was identified so that, you know, people who have multiple pregnancies and early pregnancies actually have fewer cancers. And so, you know, if you have
you know, maybe 50 cycles in your lifetime compared to now. Most women have about 300 cycles in their lifetime. So there was a whole effort to try and put forward a kind of birth control pill that really decreased the number of cycles and lowered the estrogen environment in the meantime. A lot of that work hasn't gone as far as it should have, but it's, I think, a very interesting, you know, it's a very interesting idea, and it kind of leverage, it kind of brings together some of the epidemiology data looking at breast cancers worldwide and trying to understand, well, how can we kind of mimic the kind of environment that reduced breast cancer. So this is an example of the kind of prevention type study that could be done going forward. And I think one of the things that we have to figure out is how do you create an environment where it's easier to assess and test some of these prevention studies in the course of routine care and not make them be hundreds of, you know, tens of millions of dollars.
Let me thank the caller, and I wonder, we're expecting Margaret Hamburger here any moment. I wonder if either of you know anything about, it's something I wanted to ask her. Paul Hardy was a lead reviewer on a machine that was designed to actually search for signs of breast cancer, and it was refused as far as approval. A number agreed that it shouldn't be approved, but it went on the market anyway. Is this familiar to either of you?
I'm not familiar with the particular machine, although that kind of stuff goes on all the time.
Yeah, well, maybe we could address it in a more generic way then. I mean, about how these things should be moved into the market or maybe held up. And from your perspective, are they held up too much, or are they moved too quickly, or what?
I think that unfortunately people get very excited and will promote a technology that really hasn't been carefully vetted and put it on the market. And I think people who are, of course, very excited and interested in preventing their breast cancer or treating their breast cancer can, you know, be at the mercy of people who really don't have the data behind them. And I certainly don't think that's a good thing to have on the market. So I do think that, you know, the role of the FDA is to say, look, this has been vetted, and there's actually some really solid data to show that it's a value. So I actually think the FDA plays a pretty critical role in helping to prevent, you know, women from being the unsuspecting victims of people who believe in what they have, but they don't really have the data to prove it. While I agree that we need to make it easier to bring new ideas and concepts into the market, you know, we all share a role in trying to come up with systems that help us make it easier to evaluate new technology. That's part of what we're trying to do in Athena. But at the same time, I don't think that's a reason why we should be putting things on the market that have no data behind them and no value.
I want to say something before we conclude about tomorrow. I'm going to be joining you over at the Commonwealth Club, and this is a launch, really, isn't it?
This is very exciting. Actually, Arash and I will be on the panel again tomorrow, and we're going to talk about breast cancer prevention. We want to make sure that the public is aware that there are really, you know, that the concept of prevention should be on people's radar screen. There's a lot we can do today. It's not perfect, but it's important that everybody know about it. And we've worked hard to try and incorporate prevention as a routine of care in the Athena Breast Health Network. Right, Arash?
Absolutely.
And we're happy to explain to people how this works. And, you know, we're going to give it, you know, if we can make this work across the UC system, then we hope that this is something that can go viral. And probably the most important thing is that we can't do this by ourselves. Every woman's story is critical, and if we want to learn how to tailor our prevention and screening efforts, we have to have women help us share their stories, and that's what we're all about.
And the public is invited.
Public is invited. It's at the Commonwealth Club. This will be the first of a series of forums. Tomorrow we're going to focus on prevention, and we'll have others to talk about screening, ways in which we can improve screening. It's such a controversial topic, but people often don't focus on what can we do to make it better.
And this is 7 o'clock tomorrow at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. I think we have Margaret Hamburger on the line now. So I want to thank Dr. Esserman, Laura Esserman from UCSF, and Arash Naeem from UCLA. And again, the event, you can find out more about it on their website, athenacarenetwork.org. You can also find out that web link on our website.